We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We are Baltimore Positive. Happy kickoff to everyone out there celebrating Labor Day leftovers and goodies, getting ready for the first Sunday nighter. Go easy, not just on the gambling with our friends at the Maryland Lottery. 1-800-GAMBLER. We'll be telling everybody, go a little slow, but I'll be giving out free lottery tickets on the 16th at the Beaumont for the Maryland Crab Cake Tour. Tastiness is underway because people like my next guest are tourists here in a town that their brother made famous. Mark Messina is my friend. I call him the county commissioner in Lycoming County. He is up in Pennsylvania. His brother is coming in to feat the great Cal Ripken on 2131. I might be seen Saturday at the ballpark. I don't know. I love Cal. I love his kid, too. But Moose, welcome back. Welcome home for, you know, a couple of minutes here. And I always love having you on. I bothered you. I said all this up. I'm like, you do know Lamar is playing Josh Allen on Sunday Night Football. You do know, like, the 21-31 thing has been 30 years. No wonder you're as gray as you are, man.
No, tell me about it. Tell me about it. Yeah, you're putting something in your hair, man. It ain't that dark.
Dude, don't start that. No. Marvin Lewis starts that every time he comes on. I know my barber. I'm honest about everything else. I mean, I have a little silver in here if it hits the light the right way. But no,
whatever.
Dude. No.
Whatever. That's because I had three kids and you had one. I guess that's what the difference is.
I think it might be the chia seeds that I have for breakfast and the wild Maine
I clearly
blueberries.
Don't have those.
What's on your mind? I mean, I got a million directions. We'll get to Lamar and Josh Allen, the baseball side, the Cal thing, the Oriole implode. I mean, last time I had you on, the Orioles, like, had a chance, right? And like, this season has been such a flaming disaster in so many ways, and giving Bisaio the money and wherever they're going to be with Rutschman. It's just from a baseball perspective, aside from what they've done to the fans here for Birdland memberships and pissed off people, it has just been a curious mess that this franchise can't get out of its own way. And I know deep down you're really a Yankees fan, and I would give you the middle finger, but you're an elected official and I'm not going to do that to you. But like, you love the Orioles, and like, you and I, for the last 25 years since you left town, we get together socially, privately, here, there, jokes, whatever. But you don't want to see the Orioles be in last place and ever, right?
No, I mean, my son's an Oriole fan. We come to Baltimore. That's where we go. I've been to Yankee Stadium a couple times, but it's always an event. There was something with Mike, an old timers game or something. But, you know, we make the annual pilgrimage down. We were there the day this year that the Orioles won 18-0. That's the day that we were
come
there.
back. We need come get a season ticket.
Well, it was the Rockies. So, you know, if they played the Rockies every day, they'd
you
be
were trying to pick a game where they won?
No, it just worked into the schedule, you know, because here it has this for
I just thought you're a big fan of interleague play. That's all.
Here's my pun of the morning. My youngest kid just went off to college. So now I'm an empty nester. I'm not a nester.
I've been an empty nester for
I'm an empty
years.
Nester.
Yeah.
So
I
yeah,
was
so
the first nasty nester, but not, I was the original,
yeah,
the OG.
You're the original, I'm the empty. So, yeah, I mean, when you look at teams like the Orioles that don't have the payrolls that the Yankees, the Red Sox, the Dodgers, and all those teams have, you've got to draft well, you've got to develop well, and the key people have to stay healthy. And so much of the excitement a couple of years ago was focused around Adley. And then, you know, the world has just changed. And you know, Gunnar's having a fine year, you know, but he's not, you know, an MVP race. And you know, they're still waiting for Jackson to get it going a little bit. And he's still so young. But like, Adley was one of these keys. I mean, I remember when he showed up and they're like, the difference in the Orioles record since he's arrived as the catcher, and they haven't been swept in a series since he arrived as a catcher. And now,
he had all that Pony League thing,
yeah.
patting guys on the ass, rah, rah, that Pete Rose thing. You know what I mean? Like, literally, like that AJ Pierzynski kind of thing. You know, whatever it was, he had energy for a catcher that made you think, like, this is a Buster Posey. This is a boss. You know, this is a Thurman Munson. This is a Carlton Fisk. This is, you know, not Johnny Bench. I did mention a couple of Hall of Famers that are, you know, with your brother in Cooperstown, immortalized, but just in the hall of, let's hit the ball the next 5 years and earn yourself a $200 million contract by the time we move you to first base. Don't be Butch Weininger. No offense. We had a nice Pennsylvania kid. I had to get that to you there, dude. Dude, I drop old baseball-ish on here just to have fun. Like, I found a ticket stub for a game, and I remembered seeing Tom Chopin pinch run when I was 7 years old, and I was so excited that Tom Chopin was pinch running. You know what I mean? Like, I love baseball, and with nerds like you and me, we get together. It's well,
Well,
what's the
I'll say
path
this.
out? Go ahead. Go
I'll
ahead.
say this. I haven't heard Butch Weininger's name in a long time. I can tell you, I've never heard Tom Chopin's. You could have just made that up, and I was
No,
there.
Tom Chopin, a fringe catch-on outfielder, Rochester 72, 3-4, playoff games, probably 73, 74. So nonetheless,
I'll take your word for it.
yeah, Tom Chopin, trust me. By the way, I had compared, we were try, we were always comparing to Wieters, right? Wieters was going to be bench. Before you were around, there was Earl the Big Cat Williams, which was a part of that big deal with the Atlanta Braves. So chasing catchers, Dave Duncan came here and caught kind of middle to late in his day, and Terry Kennedy caught here. I mean, there were a lot of like veteran kind of guys that came in and were that guy here, but drafting 1-1s and expecting them to be catchers, and we could talk to BJ Suroff, who's still here in the community doing great things at Pathfinders. But like that 1-1 thing, Ben's on the broadcast every night, Moose. And I don't even know if you ever thought Ben had that in him or whether Ben thought you'd be county commissioner one day.
It's a strange world, isn't it?
But the pressure on a 1-1, a catcher, the comparisons, right? The Wieters was going to save the franchise. You remember that? I was there the night he came into the lineup, 2009. There was a rainbow that appeared over the warehouse. He had like three hits and four RBI. It just feels like these momentum changes that you're looking for in this franchise because they can't get out of their own way since 21-31. You know what I
Well,
mean?
it's
Like
hard.
literally.
And I remember we picked up Charles Johnson from the Marlins. He
There you
kind of
go.
fell
There
into
you
that
go.
same thing. You see it in every sport with teams that are struggling to get over, like a team like the New York Knicks do it. Like, this is going to be our guy. And I know here at Penn State football, with every new quarterback they get, he's going to be the one to get them past Ohio State. And when you get the teams that win all the time and they just bring in pieces, and there's never that savior. Or the teams that are always in. But when you're looking to get there and you're trying to build hope that, oh, it's all going to be because of Adley Rushman. They talked that he's been hurt. He probably was, but it's hard. It's hard to be good. I remember once a long time ago, my brother said, there's lots of guys that have one good year. But then as the league adjusts and as people figure you out, and the great players go on, and it's harder. And there's been other guys that have burst onto the scene, and whether they couldn't stay healthy or whether it just didn't last or whatever the case may be. But the other thing too is the Orioles had a lot of pitching injuries, and it's not when you don't spend in the off season. Like, they didn't give themselves any margin for error on the mound. And then early in the season, when they had the injuries and they just got behind the eight ball. But when you're like that, when you're an organization that spends like they do or doesn't spend like they do, you need to have a lot of things go right, and you can't have very many things go wrong. And it's just there were just too many things Oriole wise. 3 years ago, you'd have said if Adley Rushman's a below average catcher, the Orioles aren't going to win, and they knew it, and let alone everything else. So. It's just been a rough go. No one saw it this bad, but I don't know. I don't think the future. I'm glad that they seem like they're trying to lock people up. They got to lock Gunnar up. There are guys that they just can't let escape. And you do have to spend money. You're gonna have to spend money on the free agent market and get some pitchers.
You have any confidence in it at all?
No, because I don't know the new owner. And we'll have to see what his I think I remember back with Angelos, it was just you get the new owner at coming in following the previous owner, and there's this like you're like riding on a white horse, and you're this
Oh, you were
hero
here for
figure.
all of it, right? Your brother was a big part of how effed up it was in spring training before, during, and then after. And then all the people coming and where's the money? And your brother gives him a deal. And your brother, dude, there's so much hatred and love for your brother here over the course of time. And I was intimately involved, you and your brother, and knowing stuff that I couldn't even report that I knew about at that time, and maybe not even now, 25 years later. But I would say this, like, your brother never wanted to leave, and he only left because the ownership was shit. And that's that. And that's the story, and that's the true story. And anybody would have left, and nobody would have stayed, and nobody did stay. And Cal barely made it to the end. And then all these years later, we talk about it, but ownership is everything, the
Well,
only thing, especially if it's going to be overbearing and poor.
you need the owners that are so, I mean, obviously these owners got to be rich by being incredibly
Good at something.
aggressive, astute businessmen somehow. They were really good at making money. And now that you get to a hobby where in a lot of ways you're going to lose money until you sell it. You know, when you sell it, you're going to make your money back because, you know, who just sold for $3 billion or whatever, you know, when the Lakers are up and all these, like, it's ridiculous. But, you know, I can imagine when you're sitting there saying, you know, do I want to give this guy a, you know, $50 million, $150 million, 200, and I might be a 500 team anyway. And it's essentially coming out of my pocket. It's my business, but it's my, and you get those guys that, you know, once it wears off and once the reality sets in and you're signing checks, you're like, wow, do I want an extra $100 million on my payroll to do what? And I might, you know, if I knew I was going to win, maybe. If I don't know, I'm still going to be behind the Yankees. I'm still going to be, you know, look at what Toronto has now with Vladimir and with young Bichette. And so it's, I get it. You've seen these people come in, and then once they get in the seat, and once the checkbook gets put in front of them, you know, they just don't spend like they, I even think like they thought they were going to. And I think
Well,
just in the
Peter
world.
did, and then found himself in debt, like badly. When your brother left, dude, he was bleeding money for real. Everybody I know on the inside, Mike Flanagan, Joe Fall, everybody's confirmed that he was literally putting 20, 25 million a year of his own money in. Sidney Ponson, Jeff Conine, David Segui during that era. I've written a book about it. I mean, I'll stand behind it. And then that freaked him out. And the strike thing, both sides of the first strike and then the second one that almost happened, that he got involved and got a lot of credit with Bud Selig for staving it all off. And we're about to get that going again. We're reading Lords of the Realm all over again for the end of next summer. But, you know, the Angelos money thing is a curious thing because I do want to bring this up. And I think I brought this up the last time because it's over with now, right? Like, Peter's dead. The kids have the money. They're out. Some of their people are still here screwing the Orioles up, quite frankly, on the inside. They did not clean house in any way, which is one of the reasons it's been kind of poor the last 18 months, including why I don't have a press pass, why they hold the old grudges, why Mike Bordick's not there, why Rick Dempsey's not there, like why BJ Surhoff's not there. There's just a lot of people that still have been cut out, like Adam Jones once said, even though he's been cut in Barcelona or whatever. But the Angelos money thing, and how much money he really made, and what David Rubenstein's goals are here as a 74-year-old man. I can go back and I wrote a book on this. Peter's goal was to be a hero. He ran for mayor a couple times, was never going to be a hero like that, made a boatload of money, didn't know what to do with it. His statue was going to be the Orioles. He didn't even like baseball. The Orioles was the biggest deal in town, and that was the thing that could make him Mr. Big. It's not really unlike, dictator down in D.C., Arne Schittler, that there was a power thing and a what can I buy and what can I put my name on and what can I make mine and what can I own and what can I control. And as Peter Schmuck once said to me, he hated everything he didn't control and he abused everything he did. And I'm talking to Mike Messina's brother about why Mike Messina was a Yankee, right? All 25 years ago. And seeing this guy come in, And being an older guy myself and having tried to shame Peter Angelos like Charles Dickens style into Ebenezer Scrooge into being a better man at the end of his life, the way maybe George Steinbrenner was reputed to be at the end of his life, that Rubinstein buys his team for $1.8 billion. Peter Angelos bought the Orioles with about $29 million in cash. It was called $173 million. There were banks. There was a note. Peter sat on the air and talked to me about, well, we have a mortgage. It's kind of like your house. And I had an apartment at the time. But all these years later, I look at the Orioles and I look at the legacy of the Angelos family and I look at the boys who cashed out at a billion. Mom's still here, right? But they're each at about $1 billion on top of the years where they got right on their taxes, got a $75 million payout in cash just to have the Nationals exist. The entire network that they built and they milked and they wrote down and wrote off and just took money from the Nationals, fought with the net like over 30, 40, $50 million a year, every year compounded for 15 years. And it would and sued the partners, broke every codicil in their partnership, just everything they did to illegally entangle Major League Baseball for a decade and a half. All of this awfulness that came out of it. He didn't die a hero. He didn't die a winner. He didn't die well. He didn't die happy or healthy. The kids. He died with the kids at each other's throats. There's 200 pages of documents about all sorts of garbage that he never wanted to be made public. And in the end, all the money they ever made, which was hundreds of millions of dollars that they made as a family, hundreds of millions, if not like on the billion range, after he lost that money, he got it all right. And then all he did was make money. You know, then after, once Andy came in, all he did was make money. I think to myself, was it really worth it? You know, when the
Well,
book was
Anthony,
written,
it's the good question. Like
he made $1 million a day every day they owned the team for 30 years. They made $1 million a day every day, as a family for owning that team. And all they were chased out of town and they have all this money. And it just, smacking my head, shaking my head, you know, whatever the internet would say. Moose, that's really the story, man.
Well, when you get like I don't know to say the psychology of greatness, but when you see about Olympic athletes, when you see about the pressures of Olympic athletes and the pressures of Ivy League students and all these greatness is hard and it comes at a price. And because that's what I've heard, normal schmucks like us who don't have that kind of money, who can't relate to it. And they're like, because people used to argue with me is like, well, why are they supposed to lose money on the team? I was like, because that's how you win. And that's how, like, if you have all this money, what else you can do with it? You're gonna buy 17 boats, you're gonna go have 14, you're gonna have a house in every state. Like these people these owners with billions, and I just saw a list the other day of how like the richest sports owners in America and all the billions, like, what are they gonna do with it? And the ones that succeed are obviously the ones who are really smart and surround themselves with smart people, but they're also obsessed with winning. Like Steinbrenner was obsessed with winning. And one of the things they said, one of the things we noticed when Mike went to New York, like when something happened in Baltimore, there was always litigation. And because there was the baseball stadium deal and the football stadium deal, even if it's something as, like a whirlpool broke, and well, the stadium authority and ours and the Ravens and this and that, and everything was like just drug out. And he's like, in New York with Steinbrenner, if something broke, it was fixed the next day. And he's like, that's just how he operated. Like, we are here to win. And those are the owners that are, I don't even want to say
I'm laughing
unhealthily.
because I'm about to bring it back to Jerry Jones because he just dealt Micah Parsons off, and you're the world's biggest Dallas Cowboy fan this side
Well,
of Dave Muir.
and
And
that's.
so, you know, have you ever been down to see that facility in Dallas, Moose?
No, I have not. I have not.
Please. Here's what. I hate Dallas. I hate everything about Dallas. I will take you down and I want to tour you and your kids through that. Bring your brother, bring your mom and
We're
dad, whoever you
America's
want.
team.
Dude,
Great America's team.
it is the most unbelievable facility. And you know what would laugh the most at it? Your brother who pitched for the Yankees, who had the best of the best of the best of everything, would look at this and say, "Oh my God, this is like Turkish. This is a whole different level of over the top opulence for how they operate a football team in a cage with glass for fans with a cafeteria that looks like Hershey Park.
Well,
Like
see, this is.
it's insane, but that's the way Jerry thinks they're going to win because he's nuts. And I think anybody else that goes there says, how am I going to play football in that? How am I going to play football there? And they don't win. And to your point, he's trying to do the best of everything. I mean, he's got $10 billion thing art on the wall. I mean, it's not a football facility. It's an art gallery. It's just crazy. But that's his thought about winning. And that's your team, dude, you
But
know?
he's a very good example because he is obsessed with winning, and the money's no option, as you talked about, although he's made who knows what it's worth whenever he tries to sell it. But he shows how hard it is, and that these war room guys that are analyzing players and are crunching salaries and all the math. And still the nuance of the ability to judge talent and the art behind it, and it's just hard. And he's not good at it. He's good at all the other stuff around it of being of building revenue, of branding, of all that.
But he
He
is a
is.
control freak and can't let go. And that's not uncommon to anybody I know that owns a business in Baltimore or anywhere
Correct.
else, right?
But when it comes and right and
Including the guy you're talking to.
but you see the successful guys who are like, listen, I'll do all this stuff, I'll make the money, I'll do the branding. You draft, you evaluate talent, you hire the coaching staff.
You know what I don't do is operate the radio tower because I have no idea,
Because you
I
have
don't even
no
know how it
idea how it works.
works. Right. Yeah. I
And
mean,
Jerry's a good he is a good example of new, just not because that's where people are like, well, just spend money. Jerry spends money. And by the way, the Micah Parsons deal, I'm a little bit proud of him for this one because you can't, like, we're worse immediately, clearly. This is not,
I love how you say we when you talk about the Cowboys. I
but
miss
like,
you, you know?
down the road, 4 years from now, 5 years from now, it depends how what they do with the first round draft picks. It depends how this defensive tackle, it's all pro, works out. But you look at, I always go back to the Tom Brady. Tom Brady was never the highest paid quarterback. Tom Brady used to give money back and restructure it because he's like, if you give it all to me, I'm not gonna have enough talent around
Yeah,
me.
he probably met Kraft over at the Chinese massage parlor and got paid. I mean, I'm convinced that Brady was making money off the, you know, I'm convinced that there was something going on there to take pay cuts, that there was other money away from the cap. And they broke every other rule. I mean, literally. I mean, they're the most cheating thing this side of the Houston Astros. And it is amazing in modern sports. We talk about these cheaters and stuff. We go back to like the Indians climbing through, you know, Jason Grimsley climbing through things to steal bats and stuff like that. There is the cheating part of this that you know that's
Who do you
always a
like? Tell me
factor in this,
somebody
you
you
know.
like.
What's that?
Who do you like? Tell
What
me
do you mean?
somebody. Everybody, you've gone through all the villains of the sports world. There has to be a hero somewhere, isn't
Oh
there?
my God, I think there's a hero born. I mean, I think well, I was gonna say Shohei's coming to, but he's gonna gambling, right? So we got that going on. So I don't. Where are my heroes other than Robert Plant and Jimmy Page? You know, what can I say? Mark Messina is here. Hey, dude, I am not even curmudgeonly about it, but when you got a kicker out and the Messiah here and, you know, and then they draft a kid that had problems, I mean, you just wonder, like, what's going on? But the baseball team specifically, from getting back to like serious business and onto the field of how they fix this and what's going on with the labor deal and who's running the team. I mean, I'm convinced Mike Elias can identify talent. I'm also convinced that if you're my general manager and I own the team and you fire the manager on Preakness Saturday morning. You don't show up for the media and the fans on Tuesday night in Milwaukee 3.5 days later. So, I mean, they have a real leadership messaging issue here, in addition to can Adley Rutschman play? Can they sign Gunnar Henderson? Will Bisaccia really be worth the money they invested in him? That's like on the field stuff. I go back to who's running the place. And by the way, I hear Michael Arougheti, the number two, is a little more like the number one than the number two. And I'm hearing more whispers because Moose, they're not making money. There's nobody in the stands, right? They don't have cable television figured out from a revenue standpoint. They're rebuilding the stadium. They're doing like a club thing and trying to get premium this and that. And there's not a whole lot of money here for that. And every fan is pissed off by their Birdland thing. So as you fly into this, they're trying to sign free agents in the offseason. I don't know where they're going to shop for pitching, but they're going to have to shop for pitching, man. Like that's going to be the story the fans are on, and what you're on as a baseball fan is, can you put a better team on the field next April 1st? Rodgers has been nice piece. Bradish coming back, nice piece. And they have all of these young bats that we're just going to have to cross our fingers. And the thing that I've said to Luke a lot, and you know this, it's August, you know, end of August, early September. If Colton Cowser can just hit 312 this month, it gives you something you feel good about in the offseason. If any of these young players, Beavers, certainly Bradish being so important in regard to make four starts, five starts, show me that you're healthy and you're sound again. Because putting the Humpty Dumpty together in an offseason with labor work problems, Lamar might win the Super Bowl here. They're not going to have a lot of fireworks, but they have to have some pops and bangs that make Luke and I get back together after the Ravens parade about February 11th and say, do they have a chance to win? Can they win 90 games? Can they make that dip that Houston made a decade ago, which was we're a playoff team. Oh, what the hell happened? Oh, now we're banging trash cans. We're winning World Series.
So you really think the Ravens are that
You're gonna
good?
have that argument now. The day
Well,
after you
no, I
deal
just
Micah Parsons,
now
you want to do that?
to stay with the Orioles. One of the things that I've noticed through the years is young players in September, under the cover of NFL and college football darkness, it's such a long season, and you get these kids that into July and into August, it is a grind. When they get to September, it gets cooler. It's the heat, it's less oppressive, and they can see the finish line. And as you said, we see kids, you'll see bad teams that have a 500 September because the kids can see the finish line, and the old guys are like, hey, I can get through this, and I'm worried about my contract next year. And I've never talked to anyone, but I think the psychology of playing baseball in September on a bad team is way easier than playing in July and August. So it is, and a lot of the sports world has turned the page to, nobody's checking Minnesota Twins box scores in September because their season's over. But you'll see some of these guys, if you're a hometown guy like Couser, what happens in September?
Well,
Bradish,
they
how's he
this
doing
is
in
different than
September?
watching Jay Payton at the end of it. You know, like this is just different because all of these guys to me, and I said this to Luke last week, I give him a fresh scorecard about August 20th, last 6 weeks, the day Bradish came up, pitched well. They figured out where Rodgers is. All these bullpen guys that aren't, you know, who knows what these guys are. The eyes are on Mayo, Couser. You've already referenced Holiday. Let's get him going. Well, Holiday hits 340 in September and hits six bombs and drives in 18 runs, and the team goes, I don't know, 18 and seven. It like helps Manzolino keep his job. I mean, there's just a lot going on here that feels like preseason football to most people. But I think to the people in it, and your brother mostly played on pretty good teams or teams with that going, oh, not around here toward the end, but seeing, and that was a bunch of old guys that kind of failed with this and that and hanging out and whatever. This is a different wave of judgment for these young players that these next couple of weeks are going to be fundamental about how we feel about Rutschman, Couser, Westberg, who can't get on the field, Mayo, who hasn't proven anything, Holiday, who you're already, well, like he's young, like, come on, man. It's go time, boys.
Well, he is like, what is he, 21?
Yeah.
I don't, I, was I, Mike was 22 when he got to the big leagues. So, like, we got to pump, like, how good is Holiday going to be when he's 25? That's what I'm like, let's give him, he's improved, but he is still so young There are so many, Wade Boggs was 26 before he showed up in the big leagues, and this kid's 21. So, like, there is a level of patience, but Rodgers changed things. There are the glimmers of hope again. And hopefully that the Orioles learn from the offseason. But you're right, when you talk about, and I'm not telling you anything you don't know, but the way society's changed, we remember what 90s Camden Yards was like, and how many, what the knock against Camden Yards when it was new was it was the suit and tie, guys eating sushi, they're not baseball people. Well, now the suit and tie guys don't go into the office, as much. They work from home, and there's so much less of that. Oh, I'll walk across Pratt Street to the stadium because I'm working downtown. And how much of that society stuff after COVID and the working remotely, how much has that changed the downtown ballparks where, 30 years ago it was a jewel and everybody needed to have a downtown ballpark. And now downtown's different.
Let's go to the
So,
Battery.
yeah. So these are things that nobody saw coming. The thing about Elias that I thought is interesting, and you know this because you're Houston is like the fourth largest city in America, population-wise. It's like New York, LA, Chicago, Houston. Houston is huge. And when you look at what they had, and then you come to Baltimore, and I think what he's done, I think they had things going in the right direction. Again, we see Adley got hurt and it kind of pushed it. But in his, what he seems to be good at is pushing it down the road, saying, we're still, now we're 3 or 4 years away. We're three, and as long as you're 3 or 4 years away, how do you get mad at the general manager? Like, this is the plan. We're 3 or 4 years. And as long as he can push that off, he's got job security. Because that's a tough thing in the general manager job. When you get to the point of, hey, this is when we're supposed to win, now you've pushed all your chips in and now there's pressure. But as long as you can keep convincing people it's down the road, hey, don't get mad. We're still 3 years off. And that is different because in Baltimore, when they brought him in from Houston and everyone said, oh, look, it's like bringing a guy in from Alabama to coach college football at the University of Maryland. Well, he's got this pedigree, but he was brought up in an environment, their environment, you can't grow the same crops there that here that they grew there. So it's just the world is different. And you have to find someone who learned to win at Indiana to come in to win at Maryland, as opposed to winning at Ohio State and coming in to win at Maryland. So I don't know if yeah he's done some really good things in the draft. I don't know why he didn't draft any pitchers, but
You know why? I figured this out. I talked to someone the last couple of days that had a really interesting insight into that. All of the trades they made 4 weeks ago netted pitchers that were second, third, fourth round kind of pitchers that they might have taken in 22, three or four, right? If you go and look, just look through it, it was kind of a replenishment of, hey, I want that kid from the Padres, the Boston guy, whatever his name, right? So, like, all of those guys were like replacements that they used, O'Hearn, all the pieces that, and they also chipped in $8.5 million of money. And that's a different thing than John Angelos would have ever have done. To your point, like, they didn't make enough money when they walked out with $1 billion. And there were micro pieces of that. And I just want to go back to one thing you said. By the way, Mark Messina is here. And I am going to ask you about arms and pitching before we go. Not so much Lamar and Josh, but the, oh, I lost my train of thought. Damn it. Go ahead. Move on.
Anyway, you get to Lamar, and I wrote a piece on a post on Facebook last year. I have become the biggest distant Lamar fan, who is a cow. I'm a Cowboy fan, but I always have been. But I don't, the criticism that this kid takes, and I still say kid. Well, he's not 30 yet. How old is he?
28.
Okay, I mean, to me, all these I called a
Well, he was
40-year-old a kid
super
the
young
other
when he was drafted. Now, he was like
day.
junior, he
Yeah,
came in at 21.
it, the. It just goes to show that he plays the position differently. He looks different than the quarterback that we grew up with. I remember people saying like, the quarterback is supposed to be the CEO of the organization. And, when they were talking about guys like Ryan Leaf and guys like that who just didn't carry themselves, like the Peyton Mannings, like the Roger Staubachs, like the, and you, he's He plays different. He looks different. He talks different than any other great quarterback we have ever seen. But he is so productive. And the whole knock that he doesn't throw well. And yeah, he doesn't stand in the pocket like Brady did or like Aaron Rodgers does and throw, the majestic. But one year he was 36-6 with touchdown interceptions. Like, what do you want? And the fact that he lost, when you just put the blind statistical comparison between him and Josh Allen,
Oh,
and I
it's like
feel
looking at Babe Ruth against, it's
not.
crazy, right? It
And
really is.
it's like now we go back and talk and we're like, hey, by the way, Michael Jordan didn't win the MVP every year. Some years they gave it to other guys, like Karl Malone and Charles Barkley. And you're like, what do you mean?
Drexler won one, I think, too. Yeah.
And when we look at last year, it was a universal aspect of we feel bad for Josh Allen. He keeps losing to the Chiefs. He can't get over the hump.
I think
He's
the
a
thing with
good.
Josh Allen, and I talked to Buffalo people this week, and I just want to be fair because they all are, pro Josh, right? And neither one of these guys have won the big one, but Josh has beaten Mahomes a couple times, right? And then, I mean, excuse me, lost to Mahomes a couple. They've all lost to Mahomes, but the issue with the Buffalo thing on Josh Allen is last year they lost a lot of players and they still won, and Lamar got Derrick Henry. And didn't win, right? And I know they vote on that before or where they were supposed to be, but this time last year we played Buffalo in week three, and the Ravens beat the snot out of them. And part of that was like Buffalo was considered to be depleted. Like when I talked to everybody in Buffalo before that game a year ago, 49 weeks ago, the idea was, dude, don't have the highest expectations. They kind of ripped this thing apart, and in the end, he still performed with new parts, whereas Lamar just didn't get an oil change. Lamar got Zay Flowers, another tight end, Derek have Hall of Fame, running back. So, like, I think that worked against Lamar. I'd like to think that it wasn't the color of his skin or like any of that because he's won or we need change or whatever. But that's what I hear about it from the people I talk to
I
about
think
it. But I'm not making the case against
right.
Lamar because no one can do what Lamar does. No one.
It's a good justification, and you see it. There's people, they get the writers get bored and they overthink it. And if you have a great first half and people are like, oh, this guy's going to be the MVP, and then they kind of get, and then they think it, and they think it. So I don't know. Here's the thing about Derrick Henry. Derrick Henry had a great year. Last August, like, there are lots of people that could have had Derrick Henry. He's older. He was, we know what old running backs do. And I remember I was at a high school basketball open gym, and a kid's there on my team on his phone. And he said, hey, I'm up on my draft. Who do you think? I need a running back. And he rattles off three guys. And I said, the Ravens can run the ball. I would take Henry. And he did. And about every week, the rest of the season, I reminded him how thankful he should be for me. But it's there has to also be an aspect of when people showed up in Baltimore, they didn't game plan against Derrick Henry. They game plan against Lamar. And that had to help. If Henry would have gone somewhere else, I don't think he's having the year that he had. You saw that with the years he'd had before. So it's sad to me that the anger. And I again, you talk about the color of his skin. I don't know if it's as much the color of his skin or that he's way different than Russell Wilson. He's way different than Warren Moon, and just the way he looks, the way he talks. But productivity, the ability to move the ball, the stress that he puts on defenses. If he goes, I said this in my thing. If he wins one Super Bowl, and if he can stay healthy and keep playing this way, and I preface this by saying we've seen older running quarterbacks. That as the Donovan McNabbs, the Michael Vick, that as they get older, Russell Wilson, they try to run less and throw more.
Well,
If Lamar
quarterbacks are
ends
more
up,
protected these days than they were
and
25
that's
years ago,
fair.
too.
That's
And
fair.
that's one of the things when I think about in this matchup with Josh Allen and Lamar, will they both be upright in January? The rules are set up for them to be more upright than when I talked about Lamar in 2018, 19, and 20 as he's going to get his head taken off. And he hasn't. He has in two seasons. It's the reason we know Tyler Huntley's name, and we never knew that Matt Schaub was the backup for the Ravens when Joe Flacco was here because he took every snap. That's the most important part. But the rules are set up that Josh Allen can act like a linebacker and play skiddly at the sidelines to try to get a 15-yard late hit by staying in bounds and deking and moving. And Lamar's like a snake. You better bring him down because, like, or he gives himself up. But part of all of that is quarterbacks have more latitude to do that.
That's a fair point. And I think if he can stay healthy and play till he, not even like 40, like all these crazy guys are doing, but to do this for 6, 7 more years and get to his mid-30s, then when it's all, if he wins one Super Bowl, when it's all said and done, when you're talking about the Mount Rushmores of quarterbacks, he's in the argument. He's, you're gonna, Mahomes is gonna be there. Obviously Brady's there. You've got the Montanas, you go back to yesteryear, you've got the Unitases. Lamar is in, because his numbers are going to be so incredible. He could rush for 10,000 yards as a quarterback. And oh, by the way, he does put up good pass, like his passer rating last year was incredible. And it's different because of his ability to get out of the pocket that there it's it makes it different than the guy who stands in the pocket and just throws, but it's effective. And I don't think the world really appreciates what he brings because it's just not what we're used to looking at.
Mark Messina is my guest. He's been my friend for 3.5 decades. His brother will be in this week for Cal Ripken at 21:30. You got anything on that before I ask about your brother? Because I have
You know
one.
what's funny? Someone texted me, like, are you coming down? I said, for what? And they said they're doing the cow thing. And I did that. I was like, oh, yeah, it's a. No, I don't know what I got going on. If I don't know, but
It's
it's not on
Saturday
my
night.
schedule. What?
It's Saturday night.
Yeah, I don't know. I
It's
mean,
September 6th, if you don't remember,
no,
Mr.
I do
Oreo
remember
guy.
that. I remember it well. It's I don't know. It's such a
In Baltimore, it's like remembering your birthday. Everybody knows. You know what I mean? It's like
yeah.
every.
I say this, and I've told people I've been to World Series, I've been to Super Bowls. It's the what. You have those events when people talk about the electricity in the air. You kind of see it, it's kind of a concert thing, especially for maybe a band that has reunited that you never thought would get back together or whatever.
Oasis. There you go.
And it's one time for you, unless you're going to travel around the country. They come to your town once. So it's that one event in whether it's 5 years or 15 years or whomever. And that was the one event that the electricity in the air was nothing like I've ever been to. And it was, they weren't an independent race. It was purely, pageantry and royalty. And it wasn't about the who won the baseball game, even though they won 4-1 and Mike was winning pitcher. It was such a unique thing to be a part of that I can. I'll never forget the feeling of just what those nights were like, and when they rolled the numbers down the warehouse, it was unbelievable. And for those of us who were there and remember it, like, you know what I'm talking about. And for the kids who are like, ah, whatever, they'll never get it.
I had tickets. I gave them to my mom. My mom took her sister from Delaware. They went that they you know what I mean? I was there, obviously. We were all there. But 30 years, dude.
It's
So your
crazy.
brother's coming in. I know he will never sit and do the show with me because he's a ghost to me at this point after 30 years. And if he did, I'd probably ask him about Hasselman and the whole role and it like the streak almost didn't happen. So, we could talk about that amongst a million other things. But if I asked your brother about arms falling off, and I know you have a boy who pitches, and you spoke to that several months ago in some way, because I think the story of the Orioles, to put this back and tie a bow on this, to recap what we've learned here today, the Mike Elias thing in regard to does he deserve his job? Does he not? Is he the right guy? He's not Rubenstein's guy. He's Angelos's guy. He wouldn't be my guy. You don't fire your manager on a Saturday morning and I for 3.5 days running my operation. You just don't do that. You just don't do that. You just don't do that. That's that. I mean, so I think less of him as a man, as a leader for that. I'm sure he's a great baseball guy and a nerd and Yale guy. I'm sure he's arrogant as hell. I don't know. I've only met him twice. You know what I mean? He was absolutely fine with me, but I didn't want or need anything. And he's one of the people hiding my press pass for me and acting like Schultz or whatever from Hogan's Heroes.
I do. I love how you did that. I'm sure he's arrogant as hell. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean,
I'm
well, I
just
mean,
making that leap.
everybody, well, I've watched the press conferences. I don't, you know, I have a lot of questions. You know, I'd have a lot of questions the day he fires his manager, and then the next day, and then why I'd have to get on a plane to go to Milwaukee to ask him about firing his. It was just 2 weeks after they gave a bobblehead away of the new owner, and they're going to finish the year in last place. And we're sitting here on Labor Day talking about whether he deserves to keep his job or not, whether he's the right guy. And you just said this is different than Houston. It's the you're bringing a water gun to a machine gun fight. So, arms. If there's anything to save the job of Mike Elias that makes it palatable that you're on his side. It's not his fault Adley Rutschman can't hit. It's not his fault that Heston Kerr. Like, you can go through the failings, but you can also say, hey, Duffer the Rogers guy didn't smell so good in the beginning. Pretty good now. He did bring Corbin Burns in here. Like, I mean, he knows what he's doing, David, Michael. Leave him alone. Let him be the general manager. I'll hear that. But his biggest argument in fighting for his job is, oh, my arms fell off. Well, is that your fault? Is that a training fault? Is that in turn? No, the whole industry arms are falling apart. I would ask you about what your brother thinks when you guys get together and what you think and if you
Well,
differ and where the solution for arms falling off. Because the one thing your brother did, same thing Palmer did, which is why they're both in Cooperstown, took the ball every fifth day for forever and did it. And whether forever is this year, next year, the year after, but at some point, everybody's having Tommy John surgery.
and this is an interesting point, and I had another one and I lost it. Maybe I'll come back to it. But oh no, I'll come to this first, and we'll get back to the arms while I don't forget this. There is a level, and it's not an exciting topic to for us to talk about because none of us know about coaching. Who's a good hitting coach? Who's a good pitching coach, and why? But somewhere in it, when you follow like golfers and they go up and down and they talk about, the swing coach and they got a new swing coach and what they're working on and how there has to be a level. It's not just like we draft a good college guy and we bring him here and we figure it out. And I know one of the things that Mike talked about, when he was at AAA, his AAA manager was Johnny Oates, and his AAA pitching coach was Dick Bosman. And then Dick Bosman ended up being a big league pitching coach for 20 years. And there has to be like these tweaky levels of discussion. When Mike got to the big leagues, Mike Flanagan was also on the staff or on the roster. So they have these like who you can learn from and who you teach from. And we just don't bring, Holiday here and throw him in as a 20-year-old and say, go hit. And who is in his ear and what they're working on, what they're trying to do, it
That's going
has
to be
to matter.
better than his father.
It has to matter. Yes.
I mean, his
And
father gave him a tweak back in May that changed him,
yeah.
literally.
And these are the things that who has good coaching and who doesn't? I don't know. I can't name you a hitting coach. I can't name, but there has to be organizational development of somewhere along the lines of what are we teaching as opposed to, hey, this guy will take the job. He was a pretty good player. And how does that help? And
Well,
I
how
think
about at the end
one.
of the year when you say we strike out a lot and we don't walk enough institutionally?
Right. And who these guys are and how you do it, I don't know. But there are lots of, the good golf coaches and the bad golf coaches. And when guys struggle, who do they go to help? And that's because we get into this. Football's not like that. Football's an X's and O game. It's a gladiator game. We throw them out there. We tell them, you block him and you cover him. And it's not nearly as much about technique unless you get to like offensive, defensive line. But baseball, the delivery, and I remember once what I saw a thing about Dwight Gooden, and my son and I were just talking about Dwight Gooden because he pulled up his young stats. There was a thing comparing Skeens to Gooden. And I was like, yeah, and Gooden was like 19 when he was doing this stuff. I know it's different. But I saw a thing when they talked about Gooden when he was with the Yankees at the very end. He threw the no-hitter. And they changed like three things in his delivery. And they're like, you've got to get the ball out of your glove quicker. You've got to do this. Because it just wasn't working. And they figured it out enough that he threw another no-hitter. So the coaching aspect, I think, is always something that gets lost. But again, I can't critique it because I don't know if they're good and I don't know if
Well,
they're
Mike
bad.
probably had six pitching coaches, right? And he had
Yeah.
Stottlemyre for a while, right?
And fortunately for guys like that, because he had guys like Flanagan And because he was smart enough, and
He
there,
had Flanagan, Bosman, Ray Miller. He had a manager in Phil Regan, who was a hell of a pitcher. Like, so I mean, I'm just thinking of the guys I know that were in your brother's year before he left here,
and you
right?
know, another guy they really liked was Elrod.
Pat Dobson was around for a minute too. Yeah.
Elrod could help. And that's one of the things. He's like, Elrod in the bullpen knew enough that, he wasn't trying to overhaul you, but he could help you when there were problems. And so those are the questions about that. Now, what was the other thing that you got to that I was going to come
Arms
back?
falling off.
Oh, arms falling off. Well,
Well, I mean,
I
I
do
think that's the delineator for Elias.
I
His
do think.
saving grace is I drafted all these kids. We haven't developed them well, right? I mean, they're not hitting the ball, coaching, but like,
Right.
hey, my pitching was all good. Bradish was going to win a Cy Young. Wells was in the rotation. Batista was going to become, a Hall of Fame close. Like, it's all gone, right?
I just had this revelation this year. As my kid was a senior in high school, watching through do are we?
Just keep going. Yeah, you're good.
Oh, okay. So when we were kids in Little League started later. We didn't have this. We're starting, in bad weather. Like our Little League basically started in Pennsylvania right at the end of April, beginning of May. And we played May, June, into July. Then All-Stars came and it was it. But they've crushed it all up earlier. And here we're playing baseball in Pennsylvania in April and May, the Little Leaguers. And June, it kind of feels, and then you get into All-Stars and you get it. And now with all the travel ball stuff, the difference is, when I was in Little League, you had two starting pitchers. Somebody pitched on, Tuesday, and somebody pitched on Saturday. And the innings limit was six. You could pitch six innings a week. There was no pitch count. So on Tuesday, this kid pitched the whole game. And on Saturday, this kid pitched the whole game. And that's what you did. And now with all this other stuff, and we're worried about arms, and I get it. But because we start earlier, and because it's April, and because it's freezing, kids get used to going 40 pitches an out, 50 pitches an out. And then you get on these travel teams where the kids go shorter and out, shorter and out, and they don't build up to the 100 pitch limit. I remember in a Little League game, I threw 126 pitches. And I only know this because the scorekeeper told me. And in high school, we didn't count pitches. The coach asked you how you were doing. And so you built this length of you and the mentality of I'm not done yet. And but you only did it once a week. Now you go to these high school games and kids are starting and we're looking at pitch count and we're like, okay, he's up to 75, but if we hook him now, he can relieve in 3 days. And we don't have that, I'm a starter, I'm a reliever. We have this, what are you available
When's a
for?
tournament game at 10 a.m. and we need to win?
Yep.
Period. That's
Yep.
it, right?
Everything is a budget. You can go this many pitches today.
Yeah.
So do we want to start you or do we want to finish you? Because again, when
Well,
we
look, they
were
made movies about Bad News Bears about the manager wanting to win too much, too. You know what I
and I
mean?
get
Like,
that. And there was the bad side of it. Don't get me wrong. But I was just thinking about this because I was doing a thing. And when Mike was 17, he was on the US junior national team. And the legend, the Stanford coach, when he told us, he beat Cuba 1-0. That was kind of his national coming out party. The Cubans were the defending national champions. He beat them 1-0. He threw a 9-inning shutout. And the guy from Stanford is like, he was throwing 93 in the ninth. And this is a 17-year-old because that was the way the world was. And they talk about, yeah, they had arm problems back then because they blew a guy, Mark Fidrich and all those guys, they blew him out. But they're having arm problems now too. Because it's different, and we don't have, a starting pitcher goes five and we jump up and down. And he goes five and it takes him 91 pitches to get through five innings because everything's max velocity and they can't pitch to contact and all that stuff. So it is, we've tried to make the world safer, but have we made it safer? And is it because this was my revelation? When we were kids, you're pitching the whole game. And we did. And that's all. Now we didn't pitch again for a week, but now we're only pitching you 50 pitches, but 2 days from now we might throw you 30 pitches. And then three, and it's
Only
just a
guys like
different world.
Mark Williamson could actually do that. There weren't a whole
Yeah.
lot of arms that could do that. Mark, I got a roll, dude. I love you. Good luck
I
to your
get
Cowboys this year, your diminished team. See, this is where when somebody wins an MVP, they'll say, Well, they're a diminished team. So I'm not making a case for Josh Allen at
Hey,
all.
I got one really important question
Ravens
for you.
better win. Go ahead.
Any chance you're going to see Tom Kiefer in Allen Stroudsburg in October?
Sure, I'll go with you. Yeah.
I think there's a couple of us that are going over. Have you seen Kiefer post Cinderella?
I had him on the show. I saw him perform at Sarah Fleischer's event here. Been a decade, been a minute, but I had him on the show for him. And
Unbelievable.
I will shake you all night. And
He is.
I have a very special friend that's very close with the band. My former agent, Chad Wiesling, for he current agent, former player Chad Wiesling was very, very close with the Cinderella Boys. So I'll work that out. Shake me all night. All right.
It's he is that good.
All
He's
right.
still that good.
Well, Lamar and Josh Allen will shake us all night on Sunday night. Mark Messina, brother to the stars, my friend, his Hall of Fame brother will be in. It's 21-31. I'm not really 30 years older. I'm Nestor. We're Baltimore Positive. Stay with us.